We're going to get started in just a minute, but before we do, I just want to play this really super quick video. So like as I was just mentioning, so this image here is from the People's Convention that my partner Shauna and I put together last year, the weekend before the Democratic National Convention. It was the culmination of months of planning. What we did was we put together a what we called the People's Platform, which was a crowdsourced, essentially a crowdsourced constitution of issues that was brought together, and we got grassroots groups to kind of contribute to this document. It was with five different platform planks, and it was a great fun. We had Nina Turner spoke, Jill Stein spoke, and it was an amazing event. We had around 800 people there. We had hundred volunteers, and I wanted to just play you this video.
All these world gatherings like this, very important to have progressives come together to reaffirm our commitment to the movement. We all thank Senator Sanders for striking the match, for lighting the flame, but it is our job to keep it burning. So I'm really glad to be at the People's Convention right here in Philly so that progressives will let the Democratic Party know that we're not going anywhere. We are here for the long term, for our parents and for generations yet unborn. We're going to stand up and make sure that not only is that platform progressive, but that everybody that is elected throughout this country, from dog catcher to president, will have to answer to the progressive movement about moving this country forward, about lifting our sisters and brothers, about taking care of our children and our elderly. No more lip service.
And there's no speculation.
Not just a pretty face, everybody.
Well, by doing things like this, by the gathering that the People's Convention is doing to remind people that if all of us put a little extra on our ordinary, extraordinary things will and do happen. This is about the people and not about who holds high office. Titles are good, but purpose is better. And everybody in this gathering has a purpose. We have to have endurance. People want to talk a lot about endorsements. This is about endurance. And so even scripture says that the race is not given to the swift or to the strong, but to he or she who endures to the end. And progressives of 2016, Sanders, Pratt, the Bernie wing of the Democratic Party, we will endure.
There's some speculation based on some tweets that you might go into better green third party. Are you staying Democrat? Or?
Well, you know, I've been a lifelong Democrat. So at this point, you know, I haven't made any decision to leave that party, but I tell you what, I'm going to hold my party accountable. Just as there were Reagan Democrats, I am of the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party, or better yet, I am of Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm's wing of the Democratic Party. But she said, unbossed and unbossed. That's what we're doing. So no, I'm not going to make it easy for
them. Isn't she though? Unbought and unbossed. So yeah, I love Nina. She's great. Oh, by the way, I just need to point out that we were inside an unair conditioned, like, you know, pre-revolutionary, like, you know, building that was like it was over 100 degrees that day, and that's what she looked like when she came out of there. I mean, I don't know. She was wearing like full sleeve. I don't know how she does it. She's amazing. But really what was important there was like the underlying message that she was saying, which is, you know, this is like our government's for the people. You know, this is what this particular session is about, is like, what can we do to be able to bring government back for the people, from the people, for the people? We have, you know, what we want to talk to you about today is a strategy about how that's going to happen. So we're just going to, are we ready to get started, Mel?
Yeah.
All right. So going to start just with introductions. My name is Jack Red Pollock. I was an active participant in Occupy Wall Street, where I helped to create InterOccupy, which was the intention there was to build a movement infrastructure to kind of basically help the movement to communicate with each other, share information. We've helped provide infrastructure to organizations like PICO, Movement 2016, Movement for Black Lives, Million Hoodies. In 2012, I did work with Occupy Sandy, which provided disaster relief to the folks affected by the hurricane, the superstorm Sandy, in 2012. I was one of the original members of People for Bernie, and after that I went and founded Illinois for Bernie with my partner Shauna. After Bernie lost the Illinois primary, we started the People's Revolution, an organization that basically produced the People's Convention that I was just telling you about. A cornerstone of that event was a crowdsourced political platform that consisted of five planks that was written with the input of over 20 organizations and close to 1,000 participants. I'm currently involved in co-producing a beginner's guide to municipalism, what I'm going to be calling communism. You may hear about it referred to as municipalism. I'm going to talk about it as communism. But with the international outreach team for Barcelona and Camus, I will be talking about them later on. And currently, I am working with a small group of people. We're just getting started in Philadelphia to be able to apply the strategy that we're going to be talking about in Philadelphia, along with my friend and partner, Krista, with the blue hair. So that's me. I'm Jack Rabbit, and this is Melissa.
Hi, I'm Melissa Figueroa, or Mel. Let me work from old to new now. I was, from 2005, I've been involved in political education around the intersections of climate, capitalism, and war. I added food to that. I became a food systems scholar and an urban plan. I majored in geography, environmental studies, and urban planning at UCLA. I'm now a PhD candidate in geography, where until last year I had been working on a dissertation about urban agriculture and relocalized systems. Then after that, I became the press director for the Sign Baraka campaign and now the executive producer of the Green News Network. So I decided to kind of like go from back to front this time because, a lot of this localism and municipalist type of framing is something I've been working in for a long time. And I really thank Jack Rabbit for sharing his experience with Barcelona and being able to really like put a lot of that background in a frame that we can use to organize. So.
All right. So this idea of communism is what we're going to be talking about. Ultimately, it's to build people power and corporate control of government and win elections. It is a strategy to transform politics at a local scale and expand democracy so that power is returned to the people. Through the local, we can fight back and win against forces of oppression, basically, corporate control, the entrenched political elite in Washington. We win elections by running candidates who are people, not career politicians, candidates who commit to being held accountable to the people that they represent. So this has origins in the M15 movement. The M15 movement was essentially the Occupy movement of Spain. That it actually influenced Occupy Wall Street. A lot of the processes and decision making actually came from the M15 movement in Spain. The M15, actually, what was different about what happened in Spain was that from their occupations, they actually ended up with political parties and actual focus on electoral politics, unlike the Occupy's Podemos is one of those that came out of it. Also, Barcelona and Camus, which we'll talk about later. I spoke briefly already about the People's Convention that was inspired by Podemos and clearly my experience with Occupy Wall Street. And now I'm, as I said, I'm working on Win the City, bless you, in Philadelphia. It's important to understand that it is difficult to pin down a specific, the details of the strategy, for what municipalism is. And the reason for this is that we appreciate that every town, city, or village is going to have its own set of circumstances. However, there are certain elements that are essential to the communist strategy that we're going to be talking about. The goal of these strategies is ultimately to increase accountability and transparency in government, in addition to making the work of government more inclusive and accessible to the public. So, despite the various implementations, there are four core tactics that that I'm going to be talking about, and that's the Code of Ethics, Neighborhood Assemblies, the Crowdsource Platform, and Native Candidates. So to start off with the Code of Ethics, the Code of Ethics is a mechanism to actually hold electeds accountable to the public outside of elections. Okay, right now the way that we the way that we the people kind of relate to our elected officials is almost entirely through the voting mechanism, right? What the Code of Ethics is about is saying that we get the opportunity to actually decide what is it that we expect and demand for our support. So we're not going to support candidates unless they agree to a code of ethics that we put together, right? Now that code of ethics can look like, again, it takes the form of whatever the organization, the group, the local activists, and the public are decide that they want to make it make a part of their code. There's different implementations of this. In the Richmond Progressive Alliance, for example, they consider the only real code that they need to have their people run on is not taking corporate donations. Also, the Incorruptibles. This is also their code of ethics that they have baked into the cake. Is that. For in Barcelona, their code of ethics, on the other hand, is a lot more elaborate. There's a lot more involved in it. There's a number of different, stuff, including like term limits, salary caps. There's some considerations where people need to leave office if they are, if they're accused of a crime or something like that. So your code of ethics is really it's what you are. The people decide they want to hold their elected officials accountable to. Then there's the neighborhood assemblies. The neighborhood assemblies or community town hall responds to the alienation the public feels from the decisions that affect every aspect of their lives. The commonest strategy should include some form of it. An effort should be made to engage directly with a representative segment of the population to produce a political platform which represents the needs and priorities of local people. So again, the idea behind the neighborhood assembly is essential that the movements that we're producing, the organizations that we're producing, is representing the people of the area that it is supposed to be representing. So if you have a So if you're coming to these meetings and you have a demographic of the city that you live in, and the demographic includes like 50% African American, and you look around and everybody's white, that's a problem. Okay, you're not doing it right. So it's very important that like these the core fundamental principles that this is based on is that we need to be organizing a representative population. The organization is representing the actual population of the city that they are a part of. The neighborhood assemblies are both an effective method of outreach as well as a way to maintain a fidelity to the needs of the public. The more representative the public, the more legitimacy that you have. Then there's what I call native candidates. Native candidates are basically you're actually seeking out and looking for candidates that are not professional politicians, right? People who are sourced from this room. People that you know have integrity because you've worked with them. They're people that you've talked to. They're people that you've seen doing the work. In Barcelona, the current mayor is somebody who was elected on this platform. Her name's Ada Colau. She was a housing rights activist for years. In the same way, it's one of the reasons why Bernie had the popularity that he did and was so excited, because he had integrity. People knew that this was somebody because they could look back and for 30 years, they know this is somebody who has been advocating for these same policies. So they trust, they believe that this is somebody that they can actually put their vote behind. In the same way, amateur candidates are sourced in the same way. They should have an integrity. They imply an ethos that allows people to actually believe and vote for them because they trust them. And finally, the crowdsource platform, again, this is something the people should be, we should be giving priority to the issues that are important for people. And the only way that we can really authentically get that is by reaching out to actual people and finding out what their needs are. And this means actually doing the work of bringing people together and having conversations with people to find out what's important to them. So what they did in Barcelona is they would have neighborhood assemblies where they would bring people together and find out what was important to them, find out what their priorities were. The idea is to have a civic association that exists outside of elections that can continue to hold politicians accountable. And the way that we do this is by trying to encourage these civic associations to have policy, create priorities, and insist that politicians are held accountable to them. And I think that's it. I think.
So what we're going to do right now is we're going to do a brief group exercise where we can actually start to kind of. Because this is a very different a method of how to look at local government and how to look at sort of local transformation. You know, in many ways, like, you know, how many of you see a problem in your, like, neighborhood or your community? You try to get it fixed, and then somebody says, well, you know, that's not really possible because of this, this, and this, and then there's, like, some ordinance over here and some random rule that, like, you can't do that. How many of you have had that experience? Right? You're like, but the pothole, you know? So what this kind of approach, the crowdsourced platform, is about going from the, not really from the bottom up, but from going from the framework of what is possible within the way that local government is currently constructed to what are the actual needs of the community. Right? What do you want to see from local government in order to fix that problem? And then, you know, if this has to transform or change, it has to transform or change, right? It's going outside of, like, what's realistic to actually what do you need, right? Mm-hmm. So what we'll do is, let's see, looks like there's around 22 people in the room right now. So why don't we break up into maybe groups of five, okay? And then maybe there's, like, one that we can join because there's there, you know, not enough people in it, and we want to let's answer a couple of questions, right? So, and this is sort of part of, you'll get a little bit of a taste of the exercise of crowdsourcing a platform. So, question number one: what are the immediate needs in your community/neighborhood/city? So, think about your everyday life. You get up, you know, you go walk your dog, you go to work. You know, think about the problems that you encounter. Number two, what would you like to see from a local government in terms of the ability or capacity to fulfill those needs? Don't think about what's possible within your local government. Think about what you need your local government to do for you. And number three, what local organizations exist whom you would like to involve in producing a platform for your community or neighborhood or city? Okay? So why don't we do that for 10 minutes?
Okay.
All right? And, you can take notes, you can do whatever, but let's see how that goes out. Let's come on back. And why did I say that, like, the way David Cobb says it? Let's come on back together. He's getting in my brain now. Like, I literally said it like a Southern Texas thing. I was like, where did that come from? Anyway. Wanted to get, you know, not a full report back, but just some insights of what you all got from that experience. What were the types of problems that you all talked about in your groups? Let's just get some examples. Ruthie?
Affordable housing, transportation, crime, and zoning.
Great. How about another?
Sidewalks.
Sidewalks? No, totally.
We're talking a little town.
Oh, no. I rollerbladed a lot when I was a kid. I would have appreciated better sidewalks.
We also have affordable housing and environmental issues, yeah. And also with fracking and then the water.
Oh, gosh. That's mine, mm-hmm. too.
Well, we're in California, so we have to be careful of our water.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And just maybe a couple of locations. So what are, so, you know, these issues came up, maybe, like, what cities were you talking about? So from this group, what cities were y'all talking about in your group?
Some in California and some in Minnesota.
Okay. And in this group?
Texas and Minnesota.
Okay. And a group back there? Or California?
So Minneapolis, Atlanta, Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Okay.
Toronto,
great.
And Toronto.
Yeah, there you go.
Toronto,
right?
Yeah,
Madison,
Wisconsin.
And Madison, Wisconsin. Awesome. Yeah. So, yeah.
And we were talking about St. Petersburg and
Florida.
And St. Louis, right?
St. Petersburg.
St. Louis, right. Okay.
Florida.
Oh.
And were you in, I'm sorry, were you in a separate group over here?
Yeah, we were.
Okay, what were you talking about?
Affordable housing. Well, mostly it was me talking, and I apologize. Because we're actually doing a lot of this. Affordable housing, sustainable development, community resilience, because we're in Florida on the coast as far as climate change and sea level rise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, affordable housing, that's interesting.
Right? Yeah.
All of these affordable areas.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, like,
that's
things
not
like.
The local group. I mean, that. Not just a local issue, that is a national issue.
Yeah,
yeah, the national level's not doing it, so we got to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's right. That's right. So that's very interesting. So that, you know, there's a whole variety of locations represented. Some things did come up that were specific, like water in California, or the lack of water in California, shall we say. But other things are local in that you live it, right, and that it is part of your local scale daily life. But it is common amongst all the different cities, like affordable housing, right? So this is one way in which we can all try to think together about how to enact, well, two things. One was you just started an exercise on how to crowdsource a platform based on the immediate needs of your community and things you encounter in daily life. But then there's also another component to that, which is, you know, I mean, a lot of times there's so many wonderful local experiments going on, and I'm about to talk about two of them. But, you know, when we think about local, a lot of people kind of think, you know, isolated kind of, you know, places. You talk about local politics and somebody goes, oh, well, that's, you know, well, that's California, right? Or that, or you're on the liberal coast, or that's X, or that's X. You know, there's that sense of, like, there's so many wonderful local experiments going on, but we don't really get that sense of the shared project because it's, like, kind of isolated spaces. But we did find a couple things, I think, that kind of, you know, while there's some particularities, right, we did talk about some things that actually we have in common, right? So one is things are locally determined, right, but also kind of nationally networked. I'll talk a little bit about that later. The other thing that we had here was you know, the how do you then organize, right, in order to kind of take over your local government and start this process of transforming your city. And Jackrabbit's going to talk about sort of the specifics of that in the next section here. But, you know, there's kind of like there's a sequence that I want to kind of like call attention to, which is A, you identify your problems and make a platform. Number two, you build the coalitions around that platform to enact local power or to take local power. And number three, you enact the solutions, right, in order to transform your city, right? But you see how like the needs of everyday life and like the desire to actually improve your life from day to day is at the center of it, right? So I'm going to talk about two examples, existing examples of, I think, really good local coalitions that have, you know, in many ways kind of enacted this process, and they're living examples that we can look at. The number one is, we have domestic examples, is the Richmond Progressive Alliance. Who here has heard of RPA? Right? I know Anna's in RPA, so, you know, if I get something wrong, feel free to correct me, but, you know.
I'm not technically a member of RPA. I don't live in Richmond, and I'm not technically a member, but I do work with Elmer.
But you're from Richmond. Yeah. Okay. So Richmond Progressive Alliance is just right outside of where I live, too, in Richmond, California, and it was a refinery town, right, for many years. It was a Chevron oil refinery that's there, and it was originally built in World War II for shipbuilding, and then the petrochemical industry. And, you know, so for years, you know, Chevron had sort of, you know, been the dominant power in the place, and then after deindustrialization, it became blighted, and, you know, it's I think, over 70% people of color who live there, right? And there was a lot of crime, a lot of violence, etc. So the Richmond Progressive Alliance under the, you know, came together across party lines, so it's Progressive Democrats, Greens, and Peace and Freedom, right? And also neighborhood organizations. And they got together because they wanted to address the problems in their city. And they came together and formed a grassroots coalition that beat a $25 million campaign by Chevron in the race for mayor. Wow. Right? Mm-hmm. And the person who was the mayor was a Green, Gail McLaughlin. Mm-hmm. And she just termed out of office after serving two terms. But in that, you know, sort of decade-long span, they were able to enact a whole lot of, you know, very great and kind of innovative reforms, right? So, you know, they did a lot of environmental stuff. They established parks. They cleaned up the waterfront. They also addressed police brutality by, I think that, well, the police chief, Chris Magnus, was a believer in sort of the de-escalation method and community control and accountability of police. Since then, the murder rate or the police brutality, excessive force rate, almost disappeared under his police chief. And he comes out to Black Lives Matter protests in Oakland, actually. And so, you know, that was, I think there was only maybe one incident last year, you know, when there used to be, like, hundreds, right? Now, this year, they have just gained a supermajority on the city council, and so they can, you know, go even further than they have been able to go before. One of the things that really struck me, there's two things that struck me about the Richmond case that I just really love. Number one is that, you know, once they, you know, had the sort of the city hall, what they ended up doing was they didn't tell the local organizations to go away. They actually brought them in by creating commissions and creating structures, right, that would fill in the gaps of what they saw, right, once they got into it. They were like, well, you know, that's not being taken care of. There's, you know, what this group that cares about that, like, would create, you know, a task force or a commission to do that. So that's one, I mean, I learned my own lessons. You know, I don't work closely with RPA, but one of the lessons that I got from hearing about their example was the ability of, like, okay, if the structure doesn't exist to address that, let's make a new structure to address it, right? Number two is Richmond has been a pioneer in, like, actually proposing radical solutions to things. One of the things that, again, struck me was during the housing crisis, when there's, you know, record number of foreclosures, and there still is, of course, Richmond introduced a plan to use the power of eminent domain to buy the houses from the banks and assume the mortgages and renegotiate themselves with the residents so that they could work out a deal where they could stay in their homes. That was amazing. You know, I mean, this is using an existing tool, local government, in this way that's completely radical, you know? And, like, what they try to do is say, we can't do this by ourselves. We need other cities to back our play. We need to get a coalition of cities together in order to beat back the legal power of the banks, you know? I mean, unfortunately, there were a couple cities who came on board, but, like, you know, but of course, the banks sued and, you know, they did their thing. You know, and unfortunately, it didn't come to pass. But just knowing to do that, you know, because there was a real problem they had to deal with, was amazing, you know? And like I said, like, if we have a movement of cities that can do that, like, imagine the power that we can have collectively. The next example is Cooperation Jackson. So who here has heard of Cooperation Jackson? All right. So Jackson, Mississippi. There was a movement. It came out of the Malcolm X grassroots movement and a number of other Black liberation organizations to elect a mayor, Shoka Lumumba, and they set about kind of having this process where in a city where the economy had, you know, just tanked, right, and there's like just record problems of joblessness and, you know, just economic, just years of like active racism, structural racism, deindustrialization, neglect, you know, and repression, decided to create a new economy, right? A new economy based on cooperatives, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so this was, again, addressing an immediate need in the community, record unemployment and, you know, economic ruin, but decided to build it a different way, right? And what they realized they needed to do was take the reins of local government, right, in order to facilitate the process of building a new local economy based on cooperatives, right? Because yeah, you know, you could do it without taking local power, but if you do that, what's local government for currently? Facilitating the needs of corporations, right? What they needed to do was actually take the reins of power so it could facilitate the development of a cooperative economy, right? Mm-hmm. So they did that, and you know, some of the stories that I've heard of, I'm actually going there in October, so for the first time, so I'm excited to like really get some on the ground stuff about it. But one of the striking things about that for me was the fact that it was a movement that was undeniably born out of Black liberation, right? But you had buy-in from a lot of unlikely actors, businessmen, you know, white Republicans, right? Like, you actually had buy-in from people that you wouldn't think would be associated with the movement. Why was that? It's because Shokwe Lumumba went in there and was like, yeah, you know, we're on opposite sides of the aisle or whatever, but this pothole needs to get fixed. Right? And, like, cooperatives can actually, like, you know, build economy to, like, get the potholes fixed. Or he goes to the businessman and is like, you know, you're struggling in your business, but, you know, here's people who can't buy anything, right? Recreating our local economy actually keeps wealth circulating in the community, so, like, why don't you buy in with this, right? So it's like, it was, again, that being rooted in your everyday life that makes a difference. Yeah.
I think a lot of that is true about Jackson. I also think Jackson is one of the more politically liberal places in Mississippi. So mm-hmm. This is a large Black population city within Mississippi, notorious reputation, right, mm-hmm. given the legacy of Jim Crow and everything that Mississippi sort of represents. And I think in some ways, white political elites, regardless of whether or not they identify as Republican or Democrat, let's think about what the Republican Party means in a state like mm-hmm. Mississippi, even what Democrat meant in a state like Mississippi up until the early 90s. And that because of that racial history and the roots of grassroots movement and what it evolved into with Cooperation Jackson, that racial history also helped to influence the interest of white political elites whose interest in not being perceived as racist or being viewed as more evolved than the legacy of racism or Jim Crow in a city like Jackson, in a state like Mississippi, was also a part of that conversation.
Wow.
And it shouldn't be... It's central in many ways to the story of Jackson.
So are you saying that part of the buy-in that Mel was just talking about was essentially political cover? Is that what you're implying?
No, I'm saying that white political elites, business owners, local officials did not want to be seen as racist. In any way,
so
and had to be pushed there by Chokwe Lumumba, who's now deceased, but came out of the Black Liberation Movement, had very central Black Liberation politics, and moved to Mississippi to take over a local jurisdiction in the South. I mean, it was political what he did and what he has been trying to do. It's like a 30-year experiment. that just got realized when he got elected.
Yes.
But there was intent on the behalf of white people in that city to not be viewed as racist.
Right.
And when you are inspired and motivated in that way, what does that mean? That means you might publicly associate with a guy named Chokwe. Right. Who's not born in Mississippi. He does not have roots in Mississippi. He migrated there, brought a whole community of black activists with him, mm-hmm. who let go of their colonial slave names, mm-hmm. walked around in dashikis. It was it's very unique.
They didn't compromise.
This is the deep South. This is Dixie. So I think all of that is a part of the conversation too.
Absolutely, absolutely, and thank you for that. I mean, I really let you tell that because I don't know a lot of that history. Like I said, I haven't been there yet. Like I'm going there soon, but you just hella educated me. And, that the mention of that was was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that.
Piggybacking real quick, just a part of the Cooperation Jackson-Cush plan, like Nicole mm-hmm. was saying, which has been in existence for decades, mm-hmm. And Chokwe Sr., who passed a few years ago, part of their whole process, even with younger Chokwe running as a Democrat, ultimately the plan is to be a separate party, following the line of Fannie Lou Hamer's, Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. So there is that rich history, like Nicole was talking about, mm-hmm. going all the way back to Fannie Lou Hamer's infamous stand back in '64 that continuously informed black political action in Mississippi and across the rest of the Deep South as well. So this is really an important, part of that, especially when we're talking about how do we organize and reach people in spaces today in the age of Trump and still in the issue of race as well. When we see it happening in Mississippi, we see it happening in other places through Southern Assembly movements and things like that. So this is really powerful.
Absolutely. And yes, and thank you. And then, this is a great also example of that local particularity, right? That it's not about sort of taking a plan and kind of flying it into places. There are some deep roots. There are some deep, there are all kinds of things that exist in particular areas that are your assets. Right, they might be different from assets in another part of the country or even another part of the state, but it's what your materials, right? Your raw material of the movements, the organizations, the coalitions around you. Those are powerful elements, right? To be able to do it, you might not be able to do it in Santa Ana, California, or something like that. But but it is a powerful example of that combination, those magic combinations, right?
So I think that one of the things that I want to kind of bring up here is that there's a couple things that that are related to the municipalist strategy, the communist strategy that we're talking about here. For example, with the RPA, what's really important is that this isn't just about putting bodies in seats, right? It's about actually transforming politics. This is a very important point that was made to me that, if anybody was in Ben Mansky's, Ben Mansky had an exercise yesterday that he did where, what we have to understand is that a lot of the things that we're asking for and a lot of the things that we want to see may not actually be possible within the framework that we currently have. So if your existing government, the way that the government is structured right now may not actually be conducive to what you need, right? So for example, when Gail McLaughlin, was elected mayor, as Mel was pointing out, she expanded the democratic infrastructure to be able to bring more people on who could then further the progressive agenda that she came in, that she was elected on, right? And so this is one of the things that we need to start to be thinking about when we're considering a communist strategy, right? When we're going to be running people, our strategy has to include actually transforming the way that democracy happens. Same thing in cooperation with Jackson. They were what Mel was just saying was that there was this idea of economic cooperatives, but then it became clear that that wasn't sufficient. There needed to be actually somebody in office who could support these changes, this egalitarianism that needed to occur. So I think that that's one of the things that we need to be doing is expanding our what's possible. So another world is possible, and that's what we're trying to build, and that's what we have to be thinking about when we're actually executing the strategy, is that we need to be able to think about changing the structure of government, and that's one of the ways that we're going to get people elected. Yes.
So I heard that there was a slogan from the in France, like in the 1960s or something. Anyway, the slogan was, "Be realistic, demand the impossible."
Yeah. I mean, and that's really what this political moment is about, I think. And I think that it is realistic in a country that, you know, prides itself on being democratic. It's really very exciting to imagine that we may actually be able to have democracy. So, you know, and I think, you know, it's just really interesting to me when we start to talk about the different tactics that are involved in this strategy. They seem so simple and so obvious and so straightforward, and yet at the same time, there's stuff that we've been told over and over again is impossible. And I think that in this particular moment, in this political moment, I think we're recognizing that there is a lot more that we are capable of when we work together. And that's another thing that I wanted to point out as well is this idea of looking at goals as opposed to, like, using partisan language. I think it's very... One of the things that really excited me about Podemos in Spain was that they actually had a specific strategy to not use partisan language. And I think that's really something that we want to be thinking about when we implement these strategies in our local communities, is that this isn't about Democrat, Republican, it's not about Green, it's not about Libertarian. It's about, you know, when we can expand accountability in government, what we're doing is we're having more representation to be able to actually get our needs fulfilled. Government is about taking the resources, our collective resources, and distributing them in a way that benefits the people. That only is going to happen. It's only going to happen if the people, the majority of people, get to be able to, like, determine where those resources go.
So we got 2 questions.
Yeah.
So, and 1, 2. Okay, go ahead. Three.
So about these parties, isn't the point of parties to represent the people, to build a power base? So when you eliminate parties, have individuals representing groups, aren't you diluting their power? I mean, the parties are there for a reason. If they work, they can really, you know, represent the people.
Are you from America?
I want to bring up actually my understanding is that the framers of the Constitution actually were against political parties, and there's something that there's a phrase.
I'm thinking of European parties.
It's called just real quick, there's a phrase called that's the Iron Law of Institutions. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but basically the idea here is that in institutions, the people who have power in those institutions will work to maintain their power inside the institution, regardless of what the stated goals of the institution is. And I think that we're seeing that happen in the United States, right? So the people in power in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are far more concerned with maintaining their power within that system as opposed to actually advocating for the principles that they're supposed to be standing on.
Wouldn't that happen to individuals as well? I mean, isn't that a human impulse?
Can I speak to that? So, there are, again, particularities about the United States. We focus on the local is because the importance of scale is very important. For national parties that have, you know, again, stated platforms or whatever, and having worked on a national campaign, I can tell you that, like, I have been to tons of cities, and that the national politics is kind of about just, you know, kind of, it's more rhetorical and pedagogical than it is actually, like, digging into people's lives and what is actually do you need in your everyday life, you know? It's very far removed from it. It's literally 30,000 feet in the air because we're flying everywhere, right? We weren't in a particular location long enough You know, I mean, like, I realized, like, I had no idea, you know, some of the needs of people in Ohio or, like, Florida, because I'm from California, you know? I'm a California chauvinist. And then, you know, it's like, what's your problem? Yes, no, what am I? You know? So, like, I don't know, you know? And, like, and when it comes to, like, national parties and those kinds of leaderships, right, they don't know either. They're like, inside the Beltway, 3,000 miles away from even where they were, you know? So, like, you know, that idea of representation, right? And especially in an era like Citizens United, right, where the national parties now serve the corporations, not the people, right? So there's that fundamental disconnect, you know, that has been produced in our nation. Sorry, I didn't mean to go around that, but it was like...
Right, that's right.
That's right. And no proportional representation.
Right, and this comes back. And this comes back to the idea of transforming politics. Right. So, like, because we have first past the post voting, that actually contributes to the idea of a binary. Right. So the idea here is that because the focus is on increasing accountability and transparency, right? Because my answer to that is that, you know, accountability is the solution for that kind of institutionalization. The problem with institutionalization, that as accountability is expanded, that is the way to maintain fidelity to the principles that the organization is supposed to stand on. Sir, just one real quick second. Unfortunately, time constrains us. We are supposed to be ending in 15 minutes. There's a couple things I really want to be able to have time to be able to have more of a dialogue and a conversation with y'all. We do have Anne here from the Incorruptibles, and I'd like to give her 5 minutes to speak, and then for the rest of the discussion, there are a few things that we need to go over, but I want to have Anne speak for 5 minutes, and then we can have a more of a conversation about this strategy.
Thank you so much. So we are doing incredibly similar things, and we talked before this conference about how much we have in common, and so our organization is called the Incorruptibles, is also working on local politics, and we have a guide, kind of like the Indivisible Guide, if you ever saw that, that can help you set up your own local chapter. We are a national organization, so we can provide all sorts of training and support. We also invite people to become part of our national team, so there are no barriers to being part of our strategic, you know, having input into our strategy and even being one of the members of our strategy team. That's something that it's our core of our beliefs, is that you build a movement not by having a few people in a board or some highly paid staff members make all the decisions and then dole out these menial tasks to volunteers, but you build a movement by giving people genuine agency and letting them have genuine effect on the strategy that you're doing. So that is also true in our grassroots organizations, and we ask the exact same things that you guys ask. In fact, we have some questions that I'll pass out. If you would just take one card and one piece of paper, and this just gives you kind of an example of how we help grassroots teams form in the beginning, is we have them ask questions like, who in your city do you want to represent? What minority communities are there? Who is underserved? Who is in the bottom 50% of wage earners? Who may need representation that isn't getting it? And how can you reach out to those people? Who are their organic leaders? How can you get those people involved in your organization? How many people of these groups are in your leadership? And how can you get them in your leadership? And then we have training on how to run town halls, how to do door knocking, how to run campaigns. So we just went through the Wellstone training, so we have a whole set of training on how to run and win campaigns, as well as money and politics reforms that need to be passed first so that we have the kind of political reform at the municipal level that we need to have. And then our long-term goal, of course, is to have those municipal people, just like Bernie did, start as city councilors and mayors, move up to state level, move up to national level, so that we can fill all levels of government with incorruptible representatives of the 99%. So that's the thing that we're doing, and we'd love to have you. We hope you join, you know, both of our organizations, and let's all kind of work together to make this happen.
Thanks, Anne.
Thank you.
Let me do it.
I mean, I think that maybe talk about the national stuff, like the coordination, and have a Q&A, or just continue the discussion.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, do you want to talk about political ethics? Well, you did already, right?
Well, I mean, I just don't think
we're
we
just
have.
Trying to revamp our schedule here.
So I just for follow up purposes, we're going to have a national conference call on August 23rd at 8:00 Eastern Time, and you can sign up for that. You can register for that national conference call at bit.ly/natcommunistcall. So that's and that's right there on the board. You can also email me at jackrabbit@winthecity.us. Tonight we're also going to have a meetup at 6:00 in the where is it? Middlebrook.
Yeah, it's in the dorm, but it's like in the lobby where there's a bunch of couches. It'll be in that area.
Yeah, so it's the first floor lounge in at Middlebrook, and so we're going to be there at 6 to continue the discussion. And I think that's it. So I'm sure folks have questions, right?
I'm going to go back to the French Revolution of the 60s. One of the posters they had was "You participate, she participates, I participate, they decide." The problem partly is the participation, engagement, all that rhetoric that liberals use. You're actually helping them only decide what they're going to do with the resources, so you don't have control over it. So power is central to all this. My question is, in terms of just a strategy, I know in my own work working at coalitions around the country for change, the one person that's missing at the table almost always is a community organizer. Mm-hmm. Not only a community organizer, but a community organizer accountable to the people that are most affected by the process. Mm-hmm. It's absent everywhere, partly because people are a little afraid of focused, continuous, sustainable community organizing. I'm just wondering, in your models, do you have a community organizer fundamental to it, or is it more voluntary?
I mean, are you talking about a paid person? Like
when you organize these coalitions and meetings, is there someone who knows how to organize professionally, working for the people, and paid to do it?
Those are usually the people who are in the room in the first meeting. Like, that's kind of the idea, is that, like, so when we did the group exercise, and I don't know if you're here for the group exercise, but people were talking about, like, the problems in their city, and then also what community organizations are already organizing around that, and how do you get them in the room? So it's, like, part of the point is to get them in, like, get the organizers, in on the ground floor, right? Because, again, it's, like, it's sort of flips the script of representation. You don't get the butt in the seats, and then they're, like, listen, it's, like, I mean, and you speak to that with your strategy for the people and the code of ethics, in that, they are from the people and accountable from the very beginning. Do you want to expound on that a bit?
I mean, the idea here is just that, I mean, the people who are involved need to, I mean, obviously the people in this room already have a certain amount of political education, and the idea is to just kind of expound on that. One of the things that we've decided, that we've come to is that, the organizations that we want to reach out to are issue organizations that typically have, their strategy is to kind of pressure from the outside. And what we're saying is that, our strategy is to say we need to have our people on the inside. And so to gather folks from different issue organizations who are ready to actually, like, take electoral power. And in that way, we hope to be able to, like, engage folks who have more experience with organizing the way that you're talking about. I mean, the thing is this should be coming from the communities. If there are organizations in the communities that are organizing or already working for the grassroots, these are the people that we want to be appealing to and engaging with to be able to, work on the strategy. Does that make sense? Yeah, well, I mean...
No, it's a long conversation. I don't want to take up any more time.
Thank you. That's great. I appreciate that.
Quickly, why are you using the word common? Communist.
It's just because it's in... I mean, because this is, like, resources in common.
The commons?
the commons.
No, I understand. It just seems like it also trends toward another word.
It sounds like communist, a communist, but...
I said it first when I came in this room.
Yeah, I know.
And it's okay with me, it's just, you know, general public.
Well, you know, but it's also controversial, so then that's more, you know, more attention. It's good.
Yeah. Kind of on purpose.
And you know, and also, yeah, so...
But you're talking about, I mean, the commons are a part of that. Is that what you're saying, or the commons?
Yeah, it's the commons, yeah. It's the idea of the commons, yeah, absolutely.
Representing the
common. Yeah.
Yep.
I am representing the common, right, the common person, the 99%.
Both, yeah. Is that what you're saying?
It's, yeah.
It works in so many ways.
Yeah. whatever makes you happy.
I want to hear you talking about actualizing the platform. You didn't get that far just kind of developing it. And I want to hear what the next steps are.
Oh, no, the actualizing the platform was basically, that was what Mel was talking about earlier. Like, you know, the main part with the actualizing the platform was really just being able to show that it's being executed here in the States. Like similar strategies are working currently. Like in the country, around the world. I didn't really speak to like what happened in Barcelona and Spain. It wasn't just in Barcelona. Both like the two largest cities in Spain are currently have mayors that were elected on using the strategy. It also worked in other cities around that country. There are towns in England that are actually using a similar strategy that have been very successful. I mean, it's happening. That was what the actualization was about.
That how, in terms of a practical thing, you're in a community, how do you reach to start the conversation with multiple sub-communities in your area?
No, that's a great question. And, you know, being, you know, starting off in Philadelphia, you know, I'm from Philly originally. I moved away and lived away for a very long time. I came back and now I'm trying to execute the strategy. So I don't have a lot of political connections to people. So what I've been doing is I've just been attending meetings. I've been like trying to identify like what are the political meetings that are happening on Facebook. I'm finding things on Facebook that are going on. I'm attending these meetings. I'm talking to people. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so really excited about this is because like one of the first things that I went to was a candidate forum at a bar, you know, and it was like, you know, some of you may have actually heard of Larry Krasner's campaign, right? He's like the guy, he's been defending activists for 30 years. You know, it's like, he's a great guy. He's been a public defender, like not a public defender, but he's been a defense attorney for 30 years. And, you know, here he was sitting right there in front of a room filled with people, and people were just like getting to ask him questions. It was awesome. You know, it was basically a room about half this size, completely packed with people, and all the different DA candidates for that election were coming up, and people were like saying, like, you know, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about it? It was awesome. You know what I mean? And so it's like, there was one person in the back of the room who was asking these really awesome questions. And, you know, so I go to Krista. I was like, Krista, go get that guy. You know, I turned around. It was the guy in the hat. He was gone. So it was like Krista ran outside, you know, and like really, like literally like tracked the guy down on the sidewalk and was like, you got to talk to us. And we had a great conversation afterwards. So it's like this, that's the kind of work. Like if you, like, because here's the thing, right? I've been talking to people from Barcelona for like, you know, for quite some time now. And I've, you know, directly asked them, like, what, you know, how did you do it? What did you do? And they were like, oh, we just knew people, you know. Oh, we just did it. I'm like, what? That's all you got for me? We just did it. Oh, so you gotta like, you know. And I love them. Don't get me wrong. They're awesome. They are awesome. And it's also, you know, I think I've heard that's very Spanish. I don't know. So,
well, I mean, sorry.
What?
No, that's kind of part of it too, though. Is that like, you know, it's like I can't tell you because I don't live in your city. You know, like, again, your assets are going to be around you in your daily life. Like, you know, I mean, this is a method of, right, being able to start something and a coalition in your city. But, like, you know, I can't tell you the particulars of how to do it because, like, I mean, I know what works for my context, but you know what better than I do what works for yours. Yeah.
So it sounds like you're trying to execute the strategy in Philly. Are there any other cities that you know of where this work is going on right now?
New York, actually. New York. Yeah.
Yep.
We. I live in Eureka, California, in Humboldt County, and we are working on this. We have been working with
a group called the North Coast People's Alliance that modeled them themselves off of the Richmond Progressive Alliance. They had gotten together after Bernie, and then what to do next. And so they have been already doing this, and now we are forming something called Cooperation Humboldt that we're modeling after Cooperation Jackson in Humboldt County, California.
There's a bunch in the Bay Area.
And there's actually people here in Minneapolis that want to do stuff. People here
in Texas, Austin.
That's right. There's somebody from Austin who wants to do
Austin,
stuff.
What about Austin, Texas?
Yeah,
there are people there who want to do this work.
In San Jose, we've had about 25 meetings since a certain guy was elected president. We've developed the South Bay Progressive Alliance. So
awesome.
We're incorporating a lot of this.
That's fantastic.
How do I connect with the Austin people?
Yeah. So.
So I'm passing around a sign-up sheet.
Yeah, but also like just like talk to me afterwards, and I'll make sure to like get you connected. Yeah.
In your organizing, or in what you've seen other people doing, what do you feel is the largest infrastructure hurdle in organizing people or setting a platform that you've kind of run into? Is it communication? Is it money?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's having the time and resources to be able to actually, like, you know, get the word out, recruit the people that you need to get recruited. That's what I've been experiencing.
Is there any kind of directory of some of these groups that anybody's put together?
Actually, yes, this is one of the things that I wanted to say, is that the folks in Barcelona have actually putting together a map.
They do. It's up on Twitter. It's awesome.
Yeah. So they're actually putting together a map for folks who are working on this.
Post it.
So yeah, so Anoa's going to post this, and you can check it out. So, I mean, I don't know if it's comprehensive or not, because I think it just got started. So I mean, like, they're just aggregating these different groups, but there's a bunch of groups on there already.
But what about in the U.S.?
That's what I'm saying. They have
several.
What do you call it? Where do you get it on Twitter or what?
I'm about to write.
Anoa's going to write it up.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was tweeting this and tagging them in the post, and then I
awesome.
Got the link. To
thank you.
Is there anything you want to say to this? Get this and don't do Twitter.
Yeah, I'm about to write the link.
Yeah, it's just a link. It's a link to a website. Yeah.
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 You want to closing thoughts?
I don't know. I just barely saw Facebook.
Okay, we're just going to sort of close it up here. Just have, like, just a couple more things to say. One is that, it's this idea of scale is, I think, really important because, you know, the local is the scale of everyday life, right? It's the people we got to deal with all the time. It's the sidewalks we have to walk on and the streets we have to, you know, navigate. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on with the Trump agenda. There's a lot of you know, they're dismantling our national infrastructure as we speak. And, to me, localism is really important in this period for two reasons. One, anything that he tweets out there as policy, right, like I said, it's a grandstand, you know. How that actually affects our lives is dependent on how it is enforced on the ground. And so, you know, localism or local taking over local government can also mean that you can create your city as a buffer zone against the Trump agenda. There's so many things that you can do: sanctuary cities, minimum wage laws, you know, funding women's clinics, et cetera, et cetera. Number two, in one way, it's building lifeboats, right? As the national structure kind of crumbles around us, right? Number two, it is also this part of enacting the city that we want to live in everyday life, you know, that on the scale of the lived experience. It means delivering the goods and improving lives, right? And number three, with this kind of networking that we are, you know, wanting to do and starting to do and that is being done in Barcelona and around the world, it's kind of like I thought about this metaphor where it's like we're a bunch of lifeboats, but now we can tie each other together so that we can make a big raft, right? So that's sort of what I want to close with.
Yeah, and I'm just going to close with, like, turn off the national news, right? Because it's like, stop looking at Trump's tweets. Please, just stop doing that. Just stop, because you know what? It just doesn't make a difference. Like, it just doesn't. I promise you, you will feel so much better when you focus on your neighborhoods, when you focus on your communities, when you focus on your city, the place where you can actually feel as though you have an impact, where you actually will have an impact. It makes all the difference in the world.
Draw
I can't.
Out your TV, you'll feel better.
Well, I mean, yeah, I like Netflix a little bit too much, but yeah, that.
Block Trump on Twitter.
That's right. Good point. It's out. I'm done.
Just need a computer screen.
I don't have a TV, but yeah. So anyway, so thank you all very much for coming. We are going to have at 6 o'clock, again, Middlebrook, the student lounge on the first floor. We'll be continuing the conversation, talking about what we can do to have continuing the national conversation. Please swing by. Definitely, if you can, sign up for the national conference call. Email me if you like. Check out the Fearless Cities map. And thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate you.
So, to connect with the Austin.